Hey everyone, welcome to my podcast, Insights by Ben Siegel. The name of the podcast was based on the idea and notion that every episode will have one insight or one nugget of knowledge after hearing from our guest. I'm Ben Siegel, Managing Director of Private Wealth at UBS Financial Services. Our team, Connor Siegel Partners, is based in New York City, Miami, and Boston. After the podcast, I can be reached at benjamin.siegel@ubs.com. Today's special guest is the founder and chief creative officer of Asprey Studios, Alistair Walker. Alistair, can you tell us a little bit about Asprey Studios and how you got there?
Yeah, sure. So Asprey Studio is part of Asprey. And Asprey is a luxury brand based in England. It's founded in 1781. So it's an ancient brand. the history of Asprey is long and deep in high-end luxury items, bespoke products. And throughout its history, it's had, I think, over 200 royal warrants. So that is serving lots of different royal families of luxury goods. It's based in Mayfair in London, so it's a very prestigious address. In the store they have homeware, jewellery, bridal handbags, that kind of thing. Asprey Studio is a completely different entity. Asprey Studio is more on the art side. So we have an art gallery in Mayfair, and then we have a large atelier workshop in Kent. And the workshop in Kent has 11 master silversmiths and goldsmiths. We have sculptors, we have animators. It's like a fusion of traditional and new skills in the digital world. And that creates the products for the gallery. And in the gallery, we exhibit them. We work with artists, contemporary artists, and we also create our own collections.
So what kind of collections have you created since you started?
So the first one was with Bugatti, the car company. And the interesting thing with Bugatti was they were founded by artists. So Rembrandt Bugatti, Carlo Bugatti, the famous furniture maker. Rembrandt Bugatti was a famous sculptor. So Bugatti is actually an incredibly interesting company because they have the roots of being artists. So we created a collection. It was actually a huge collection, 261 pieces of a particular car called the Levator Noir. And we created them in silver. They're wall mounted. And that came with a digital art piece. And each one was unique. So it was incredibly hard to make this, but we sold out in about 20 minutes. And that was the start of really Asprey Studio.
And so Asprey Studios have some of the top silversmiths in the world, correct?
We have the top.
You have the top.
We have the top. we have a very big amount, a large amount of masters compared to other workshops.
Right.
We're putting in a program, an apprentice program as well at the moment. And then we have a couple of people that we train up as well who are now incredibly talented. They are the best in the world.
So you did this Asprey Egg Collection in conjunction with Bugatti, and then recently you had one of your pieces, which is, I would say, extremely difficult, get into the British Museum. How'd that come about?
Yeah, so the Asprey Bugatti Egg was the second one we did. The British Museum came about through a mutual friend who knew a collector that collected the Albert Dürer rhinoceros print. Albert Dürer was an artist in the 1500s. He was one of the masters of his time. He was a young kid, actually. He was probably about 23, 24, when he was kind of like, world recognized. And he was super innovative. So he was really pushing for one of the first artists to do the self-portrait. But one of the things that he was known for was his wood block carving. And he came up with the idea that I can make reproductions of my own art through wood block carving, and then you'll make prints. So he was very innovative for his time. And one of the pieces that he did was on a rhino. So at the time in Europe, nobody had seen a rhino.
That's crazy.
And so I think it was the King of Portugal imported a rhino, basically. And as the boat came into port, the boat sank with a rhino on it. It was chained to the boat. And someone wrote a description, because there's someone on the port that wrote the description of what it looked like. That description went to Dürer. From that description, Dürer sketched what he thought it looked like based on his knowledge of anatomy and his knowledge of art and so on. So he then drew this, and then he made the wood block print out of his sketch. And that became, they think he did about 200,000 copies. I'm not sure if it's that much, but it was a lot. And that became the picture that everyone in Europe thought a rhino looked like.
Right.
So it's a very important piece.
So you were able to make a reproduction out of silver. I think it was 90 pieces put together, and then you made 10 that you sold to, I think, clients. Mm. And so one of the things I think Asprey Studios does is make these very, very limited edition collections that carry a lot of value out of quality materials.
Yeah, well, it's a big piece. So the rhino is a large piece.
And it's all out of sterling silver.
It's sterling silver. And it's incredibly hard to do. And we had to think about how do we do this, and how do we create it using traditional techniques, but with a bit of modern technology. So we cut it up into 90 pieces. And each smith worked on a piece, so to speak. And then they were puck welded. Now, there's only probably about two or three people in the UK that can puck weld and join the silver pieces together. And then when you puck weld it, if you get the temperatures wrong, you burn out the silver. So this piece is an extraordinary piece of contemporary silversmithing. So and that was revealed at the British Museum. And one of them belongs to their archive now.
So one of the things that I find very interesting and that I think people are interested in today is digital art and the crossroads that you use it with the productions that you make, the limited productions. So can you go into a little bit more of your view on digital art and how you see it and how you interact it with what you guys do?
Yeah, so going back to the rhino. So the rhino was the physical silver sculpture. But as Dürer was a pioneer in his time, if he was alive today, he would definitely be using digital art, because you can replicate it quickly to a mass audience. So with this collection, it comes with the inscription, the digital art piece of Dürer's drawing from the archives of the British Museum, because they actually have the original drawing. So this is an incredible collection for people to have, because not only is it in the museum, but you get Dürer's original piece of digital art on the blockchain linked to the physical.
Right.
So that's the first major museum to do it. So in the future, we're living in a world that's increasingly connected. And a lot of the younger audience, and now a lot of the,
more mature
audience, they are getting used to it. And, you know, I can remember, like, you know, when the iPad and iPhone came out, a lot of people thought, oh, well, you know, there's no keyboard. You know, how's this going to work? And now everyone is using them of every age. So they are natively digitally adopted. Now, the thing with digital art is that you can put code to it. And when you can put code to an image, you can do incredible things that that you can't do with, you know, traditional medium, because it's static. And using the blockchain, that can verify the ownership of that piece of art. So you could, for example, you could have a sculptor that's an amazing coder, and there are people like that now who can sculpt but also code, who can create a digital art piece that's on the wall and it changes every day based on a certain amount of information that's being fed to it. You know, it could change the time of day, it could do all sorts of things. But so the art world has a new canvas, so to speak, with digital art.
So when you did the Asprey egg, with when you open it up, it has the house of Bugatti. Mm-hmm. There was 99 made of them. However, you also had a digital image that came with each piece, and it was something unique about that digital image. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, well, you have an egg. So so this was interesting because Bitcoin, as you know, is now a major cryptocurrency, and but the first piece on Bitcoin was the headline of Gordon Brown, that the banks are collapsing, financial crisis. And about 3 years ago, if I'm right, maybe slightly longer, someone worked out how to inscribe images and other data onto the Bitcoin blockchain, apart from the coin. Now, the interesting thing with that is that you can't hack Bitcoin. There's no founder. There's no entity that owns Bitcoin. Satoshi Nakamoto, no one knows who he is. So that makes Bitcoin the most independent structure of ownership. So what we did, we coded the egg shape, and it's all code. There's no, it's not a picture, it's all code. And there's a light that goes behind the egg and it changes completely randomly. And it highlights the shape of the actual physical egg. They're identical. But this was one of the first inscriptions of its type. It's actually the second type of inscription of its kind. Now there are 150 million inscriptions. This is number two of its kind. So in the future, people will start collecting rare art, digital art, rare artifacts, they kind of digital artifacts, some people call it. And they will look to see, you know, the innovative ones, the ones that were unique, and especially the old ones. And we were the first to do that. Right. And we were the first brand, Asprey Bugatti were the first brand to put that on the Bitcoin blockchain.
So how does one get to a position like yours? You're a relatively young person, and what did it take for you to get there? I'm sure there was a couple of bumps in the road. No one just gets to be the creative and founder of Asprey, a long brand that has a huge legacy.
Well, Asprey Studio.
Yes.
So I worked for the brand beforehand as an employee and freelance. And then before that, worked in, I'm an artist as well, so I worked in various roles, mainly in the film industry. And over time, you know, you meet the right people as well. That's a key point. But you also, and I have a very good owner. He's very supportive, John Regas. Shout out to him. But you know, sometimes you just have to do it.
There must have been some obstacles along the way.
There's a lot of obstacles along the way, but you either do it or you don't. What's the worst that can happen, you know? But the way we structure the releases is that they're made upon order, so it's made to order, effectively. And that enables us to not carry stock. It also means we also recycle 100% of everything. But going back to your question, I think there's a lot of challenges, and especially when you're dealing with brands like Bugatti and other brands that we've worked with, and the British Museum. They're very conservative as well as pioneering. They have kind of that both of those things, right? They make the fastest car in the world, but at the same time, they're like, oh, we've got to be careful doing this or that.
They want to do it right.
Yeah, and so far, we've done it right. And I think that's the key thing as well. And you have to give something, you have to be innovative and pioneering. You have to do something that's completely different. Right. And that's the other thing, yeah.
And so how do you see luxury intersecting with art?
I think, you know, Art Basel Paris, you saw a lot of the French brands in the contemporary art fair. And that's starting to come about a lot more. And there's a lot of brands that sponsor the art fairs now. And so I think luxury and art is kind of merging in a way. But there are people that see that as a, I don't think tacky is the right word, but not an art piece.
Right.
And I think they're right. I don't think that's art. I think, you know, that's a collection that an artist has, you know, done. But, you know, art doesn't have a utility purpose, so to speak. It's not, you know, a handbag, for example, has a purpose. A wallet has a purpose. So luxury always has a purpose. It's just, you know, beautifully crafted or whatever. Art, they don't care, right? It's not, we're making a wallet. They're expressing their emotions, their feeling, their what they're trying to say. So I don't think art and luxury in that sense will ever combine. But there are artists that help create collections for the brands.
Right. And so, And how do you see digital art going forward?
It's UBS Wealth Report this year, 14% increase in digital art sales. So it's the fastest growing art movement in contemporary art. So a lot of people get confused between, you know, the minute you say digital art, they think Bored Apes or CryptoPunks, you know, that kind of thing, right? Digital art has been going since the late 1950s. So there's a lot of artists that work digitally well before the kind of 2001 craze. 2001 is crypto. That's when Ethereum came on the scene. Crypto art is its own thing. And then you have digital art. Crypto art is its own culture,
yeah.
Its own kind of collectors. Digital art, in the contemporary art sense, is exploding because you are suddenly getting something that you've never seen before, right? Collectors, they collect, you know, paintings, whatever, but suddenly, wow, you've got something completely new. And I think it will continue to be adopted by traditional artists.
So what is the focus for Asprey Studios with regard to digital art?
So we always have the digital and the physical pairing, because Asprey as the brand is known for its exceptional craftsmanship. And the digital side, is so when you buy a piece from us, you always have both. And the relationship between digital and physical can be much more intertwined. You could buy products through a digital art piece that creates, you know, the physical, for example. And that's where I see the industry going.
Right. So what advice would you give to young creators navigating the intersection of commerce and technology?
It's you know, there's a lot of people that look at AI, for example, but you're only an artist. You're not an artist through AI, right? You have to study the traditional side to it first. That's the first thing I'd say.
Right.
Learn how to draw. Learn how to, you know, do some research on art history as well. You know. Go to museums, go to the galleries, and build up, get a sketchbook and always be sketching. That's important. If you remove those foundations and jump straight to, like, you know, painting or digital art, then you're not you're never learning about yourself, kind of thing. So that's my advice.
So if I'm a collector of digital art, what should I be thinking about and how should I approach it?
Well, first it comes to Asprey Studio, but there's a really good scene happening. There's a really good scene. It's a small group of collectors at the moment. Some are institutions as well, you know, hedge funds and museums, etc. But it's a small group, and it's really fun. And the artists hang out. We all hang out with each other. And so I think, you know, get part of that, because you get to meet all the artists, and you get to be part of something that's going to, you know, start exploding. And some of these artists now that you could have bought for, you know, a few thousand a couple of years ago are now selling for over a million. You know, so...
Quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, be surrounded with these people, and be surrounded with, you know, people that have bought digital art. And when I say digital art, not crypto, I mean proper digital art pieces.
Right. And so if we were sitting here 10 years from now, how do you think the digital art world would look like?
I think two things. I think people that own masters, like Picasso's, etc., will use fractionalized technology to make use of their asset base. I think that's going to be big. And the second thing, I think digital art, the screen technology, for example, would be incredible, right? It would probably be like, you put it in your pocket, fall at the wall, and it'd just be insane. And you won't have to plug it in and that kind of thing. But I think it would be widely adopted. And I think people have digital art as well as, you know, traditional art in their collections. Like, it's not going to replace anything, right, but it's a new type of art form.
So if you had to reflect, since you started, co-created Asprey Studios, what would you have done differently, or what you're going to do differently going forward?
What would I have done differently? That's hindsight. I don't know. It's hard. It's a tough one. I mean, we're in the fortunate position that we have the gallery in Mayfair.
Right.
So that's a great head start, right? Because you have that prestigious, it's where the main galleries are in the world. What have I done differently? I'm not sure. Perhaps, like, got more people in at the start to accelerate the growth.
And so going forward, do you have any exciting partnerships?
Yeah, on the 20th of November, we have a partnership with Disney, starting with Marvel, and they have never really kind of done any high-end art collection releases, and this is the first digital physical collection with Marvel. It's a one of one, so there's like one Iron Man, one Captain America, and it has the digital art. We've done dynamic digital art. It's on Ethereum. And so this is a really pioneering release, because for us, we were to make one of just one piece of for a collection is normally cost prohibitive, because you need to make the money out of one. This is very innovative. It's a new. No one's ever done this, as well. It's new for Marvel. It's new for Asprey Studio. And I think it will find new collectors.
Right.
And it's kind of like the art world, the popular culture world, the traditional craftsmanship and the innovation of digital art all kind of melting in one pot.
And the last question I have for you, the craftsmen that work for Asprey Studio, how does one become a top master silversmith's person?
So you can study it, at college or probably university, but you go to you find a master, and the master has about 30 years of knowledge and training and many awards. But there's the Goldsmith Center, for example, have apprentice schemes that help place people into silversmithing workshops, but otherwise contact us and we can help out.
Well, glad to have you, Alistair. It was a great education on the crossroads between art and digital art. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Alistair Walker from Asprey Studios. It was a great conversation discussing art, digital art, and Asprey Studios.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.